into view. Thuvia, can you get all of Barsoom into your viewfinder? I held Gay Deceiver steady for her. Her voice was very shaky.
I think so, Captain.
Shall I go higher?
I can see it all, but my hands tremble.
Can you stretch forward enough to steady it on the headrest? I'll duck my head out of the way.
I think so. Yes, I can.
Picture. At 10,000 clicks, plenty of time. Co-pilot, the next one is mine. But get number four set up. We'll try for one picture. Thuvia, is your first one beginning to show a picture? Ask Hal Halsa.
One moment. Yes, it is. Captain, it's beautiful.
It'll be sharper soon.
Captain, said Didi, can we loosen these straps? Even though the door is dogged open and by twisting our necks all we can't see much?
Permission denied. You've seen all this before. This trip is for our passengers. Don't twist your necks. Lie flat. That is not a request. It's an order. I may have to take evasive tactics. I don't want broken necks. Thuvia, warn the passengers. Astrogator, what time is it in Snug Harbor?
Snug Harbor?
Or Greenwich, if you prefer. I'm using you to check GD's chronometer. My watch is still put away. Reminds me, did Catch like his watch? I can't read his expression. And he would have thanked you just as much for a burnt match.
I didn't know green giants could shed tears. They can.
Number four ready, Captain, Jake reported quietly. Keep your thumb near the button. Didi, can't you give me a time check?
Snug Harbor is 16:16 in the afternoon. Greenwich is 23:16.
Good time to hunt rangers. GD says you're 30 seconds slow.
You tell her that I say she's 30 seconds fast.
Tell her yourself, later. Right now she's on duty. Thuvia, is the second picture coming out?
Yes, Captain. I'm glad I ate that little pink sweet. I'm almost too excited.
Almost hit me in the tummy the first time, dear, I lied. And I've been flying all my life. Let me know whether or not the second picture is sharp. I'll use one more film if it isn't, but I'll take it myself. Ask your passengers whether or not they've seen enough. I'm in no hurry, but we've got a lot of people waiting, including your undoubtedly worried husband. I paused during a few moments of words I didn't know.
They both admit, reluctantly, that they've seen all they can see. The second picture is quite sharp. To my surprise.
Not to mine. I've got a good photography officer. Gay Deceiver, take us home. Instantly, we were two clicks over Snug Harbor. I got her under control, dead stick, and pointed her nose down. Picture. Thuvia gasped, but her camera clicked. Jake, as I come level, I tried to pull her wings off, but Gay Deceiver is sturdy. Execute. We were 100,000 kilometers above Earth, and I was nervous. Thuvia, be ready. You'll get just one chance. Jake, watch the board for missiles. I'll watch outside.
Ready for picture. Where are we, Captain?
That's Earth. Jasoom. Tell them. Picture.
Got it.
Let me know when it shows. I carefully kept my voice steady. I was scared silly, but not rationally. Even a sprint missile can't go 100,000 kilometers fast enough to reach us, plus reaction time to decide that we were a target. Probably we were on some screen at NORAD, but merely as an unidentified flying object, not in an attack trajectory, so forget it. An armed satellite might be close, but not inside Gay's extreme radar range. No hazard. It was those damned aliens that made me jittery. Continua craft of some sort, and I didn't know what sort or what they could do. And those ugly monsters reacted fast and unexpectedly.
Picture is showing, Captain. Your passengers want to know, is that really Jasoom? Earth?
Tell him to show it to the warlord. He'll identify it. Thuvia, I can see Virginia. It's an unusually clear day. Jake said quickly but quietly,
Captain, something just showed on radar. Bottom display.
Gay Deceiver, bug out. We were parked in the Bay of Blood. I re-swallowed all my guts and said, You're a smart girl, Gay.
Boss, I'll bet you tell that to all the girls. Over.
Over and out, Gay. Co-pilot, open your door manually. I opened the portside door. All passengers disembark. Princess Thuvia, I have been greatly honored to have you as such an efficient crew member. Tell your husband so. And here he comes. All hands, prepare for space. Secure everything aft. Take your usual seats and strap down.
Captain, Dee Dee said heartbrokenly, can't we have just a few minutes? We've been gone only 16 minutes.
GD's chronometer says 17 minutes.
I told you she was slow.
Dee Dee, if you get out, you'll be kissing everybody goodbye again.
What's wrong with that?
Takes time. No. Hilda said sweetly,
Captain Zebby, may I call you Captain Bly?
Go ahead, science officer, but I feel more like Capitan Vonderdecken. I repeat, all hands prepare to lift. I don't have much authority on the ground with the doors open. Not one of my ill-sorted crew flatly refused, and Jake said nothing. But Cart was so excited he could hardly speak English and wanted to talk to me. And so did the Jadara. So I unstrapped, told the others they could get out, but to stay close. This was only for 5 minutes.
Zeb, blurted out Cart. Halhausa says you've been all the way to Jassoum. Earth, I mean. Earth 10, I mean.
No, Earth 0. 10 universes away. Where your father came from. And all of us four.
You never said you were going that far.
You didn't ask. You wanted Halhausa and Mobius Taras to see what a Continua craft could do. I showed them. What are you complaining about, blood brother? I told you I would bring your princess back safely. I did. We weren't gone long.
I know you weren't. That's why it's so hard to believe.
Cart, if you're going to use Continua craft, you'll have to practice believing 7 impossible things before breakfast. Hilda, honey, can you lay hands on your stereo viewer? We've got an unbeliever on our hands. Thuv had done a good job. Every picture was sharp and properly framed, in spite of buck fever, which can hit anyone. You should see the blurry shots I got camera hunting lion in Africa. Jake's viewer not only turns paired frames into stereo, it enlarges 4 times. That one, Cart, is the crater of a small atomic bomb, where Jake's mountain home in Arizona used to be. The Panky did it, only a little over a zode after Jake and I killed that Pankera Hilda dissected. That bomb missed us only by moments. See this one? North and South America. North America spang in the middle. A clear day, and Thuv is a natural artist with a camera. If you look closely, you'll make out a big bay on the east coast, Chesapeake Bay. From there west runs Virginia, my birthplace and where your father comes from.
I recognize it. My father, your cousin, painted a map. It matches. I have to believe.
Thuv was nearby, talking with Halhausa, Mobius Taras, and her mother-in-law, confirming their excited report. She had resumed belt and dagger, hadn't yet bothered with more. Halhausa was again wearing sword, but still wore the leather of a common warrior. Mobius Taras had not yet put on even that propriety. Thuv said smugly,
My chieftain, you had better believe. Zeb, Mobius Taras asks me to tell you that, now that he understands it, he is sure that there is a simpler method without gyroscopes. But, so he claims, gyroscopes of proper quality are no problem either. He intends to put our best scientists to work on both methods.
Thuv, I wouldn't understand either one. I'm just the pilot.
You are more than just a pilot, senior cousin and captain.
Thuvia's report made it almost impossible to drag Jake away. He started spouting pigeon to Mobius Taras. Nevertheless, in a half hour I managed to herd my motley gang aboard. All hands report readiness. My mouth still tasted of Thuv, Dej, and Tira. The flavors blended nicely. Dee Dee may have kissed everyone again. She tried. So did Hilda. My sword hand was crushed and my shoulder bruised from Halhausa's farewell, with a translated word to me that he and I, together, would destroy all panky vermin everywhere. I agreed, not believing it, but certain now that every Pankera on Barsoom, if any, was in for a rough time. All in all, I felt that we had repaid our hosts.
Belts fastened, Captain. All tight, Captain Bly, honey. Belt fastened. Door seal checked, Captain.
Port side door seal checked. Co-pilot, by plan. Rotate. Execute. Gay Deceiver rotated. Somewhere. 31. Zebediah. Nowhere. Free fall and utter blackness. The cabin of Gay Deceiver held only the faint light of the instrument board, barely enough to count one's fingers if a hand were passed between eyes and board, not enough light to see each other's faces. My wife broke the silence with hushed tones.
Zebediah? Captain? Could we have the inside lights on? This is spooky.
No. Co-pilot? Dr. Burroughs was slow in answering.
No opinion. Yet. I would like to see in all directions.
Skewed? Or a tumbling pigeon?
The latter, I think, Captain. 180 degrees should suffice.
Jake, do you object to 360?
Not if you wish it, Captain.
I prefer it because I can do it by pre-program. Change attitude around L-axis, clockwise as seen from starboard, one full turn and back to zero, and stop. Done that way, I can switch off the instrument board lighting.
Oh no,
pipe down, Deedee. We'll all be trying to see things much fainter than lighted instruments. The full tumble will take 20 seconds. How's the clock in your head?
I think it stopped.
No matter. I'll be counting seconds, and we'll all be able to feel both the start and the stop, as well as a slight pressure against your seatbelts since we are all forward of the center of mass. Science officer, watch the sky to starboard. Astrogator, the same to port.
Yes, sir. Aye, aye, Captain Bly. I'm scared.
That makes four of us. Pilot and co-pilot will scan forward. Hello, Gay.
Howdy, Zeb.
Tumbling pigeon, Gay.
Forward somersault, Zeb.
I switched off instrument lighting. Execute. I started counting locomotives in my mind and felt pressure against my safety belts. I reached 19 locomotives as Deedee announced,
20 seconds,
and Gay reported,
tumble completed.
We were again in free fall, no pressure against our belts. I switched back on the board lights. You're a smart girl, Gay.
If I were smart, I wouldn't be pushing this baby carriage. Over.
Over and out, Gay. Jake, did you see anything? I didn't.
Nothing, Captain.
Astrogator?
Just blankness. Please, can we have the lights on?
I flipped on the overhead lights. Science officer?
USS Enterprise being chased by a Klingon cruiser.
Sharpie, that's a false report. The Enterprise doesn't run from just one Klingon cruiser.
It was going boldly where no man has gone before. Aside from that, I didn't see a thing. Let's try another universe. This one stinks.
That stink is me, Sharpie. Your captain is chicken. Jake, of what use is an empty universe?
Captain, empty universe is a meaningless expression. Space-time implies mass energy, and vice versa.
It looked awfully empty to me, Jake.
And to me. Captain, I'm troubled by a dilemma in theory. Is the mass in this space-time so far away that we can't see it with bare eyes? Or is it in a state of cold death, level entropy? Or did we create it by rotating?
Create it? Huh?
A theoretical possibility. If we are the only mass in this universe, then it had no existence until we created it by rotation.
but it will not collapse when we rotate out of it, because we will be leaving behind quanta radiated.
Hmm. Jake, I'm not even going to attempt to understand that. I'm just a sky jockey. But I'm bothered by something else. We started from Universe 10 and made one normal or 90-degree rotation, correct?
Yes, we rotated as planned around Axis H and thereby moved each of the other five 90 degrees. We are now experiencing duration along the axis, while our former axis of duration, T, replaces H as a spatial axis, and so on.
Hmm. Dee Dee, what Greenwich time is it? I watched my autopilot clock.
Huh? 0013.
Gay says you're still about 20 seconds slow. I opened the glove compartment, got out my navigation watch, strapped it on. But my watch splits the difference, just about. How many minutes since we left the Bay of Blood?
9 minutes, 13 seconds. Ask me a hard one.
I'm going to ask your father a hard one instead. Jake, if I now tell GD to use the BUGOUT program, would we bump into anything?
Why, I suppose we might, Captain. 10 minutes isn't very long to tidy up after our picnic. If you have some reason to go back, why not wait a half hour or longer?
Would it make a difference? You just told me that we were experiencing duration along the axis.
But, oh, I'm stupid, I'm stupid. No time has elapsed on T-axis. We would return at the exact instant we left. Oh, how Mobius Taras will laugh at me.
Dee Dee, hun, do you agree with your father? She opened her mouth, closed it, suddenly looked very upset.
I don't know. Pop, that first trip to the world without the letter J, time did pass, it did.
I said gently, but that was translation, Dee Dee. You were still experiencing duration along T-axis.
But Gay agrees with me, and so does your watch, and... But... Oh, I'm confused. Zebediah, I don't know what time it is. I'm sorry.
I reached behind, found my wife's hand, squeezed it. You have nothing to be sorry about, my darling. All three of you, you and the two Mechaniwackles, are continuing to measure duration. We just made a right-angle turn from Main Street onto Broadway, that's all. If we make a U-turn and go back, we arrive at the same intersection. Jake wouldn't describe it that way, but he's a mathematician and I'm not. I just skip over the hard parts and look up the answer in the back of the book.
Captain, you are an intuitive geometer.
The hell I am, Jake. I've simply tried to memorize all the things you told me this buggy would do. Are you certain that we would return at that exact instant? Burroughs did not hesitate.
I'm certain.
Dee Dee? She let out a deep sigh.
Pop is right, Zebediah. I wasn't thinking straight. I can't experience duration on two axes at once, any more than Gay can. But will I ever get the clock in my head set right again?
Sure you will. Just like crossing a time zone. But I agree with Hilda. This universe stinks. I want to get out of it, but I don't want to get lost doing so. Co-pilot, I still think we ought to try one schedule of normal rotations, but not from here. So I propose this sequence. Back to the Bay of Blood. You present your verniers for 100,000 clicks, straight us up. The instant you see the Bay of Blood, execute.
100,000 kilometers, 10,000 minimums of transition, or 4 by vernier. Captain, may I ask why?
You not only may ask, but I won't do it at all without your approval, Jake. I want to put us back into Universe Zero, but I don't want to do it on the ground. I want plenty of empty space around us. Then,
Captain Bly, I don't want to go back to Universe Zero. Monsters, just let me off at the Bay of Blood. I'll hitch a ride back to Helium.
Sharpie, dear, let me finish explaining to your husband the schedule of transitions, translations, and rotations I'd like to impose, one simple enough that I think I can follow it without getting lost among the universes and without tangling with something big and heavy, such as a planet. We can't check all the accessible universes. There are too many of them. We settled that the day we arrived at the Bay of Blood, but the schedule I have in mind may give us a representative sample fast enough to get you two bulging bellies to an obstetrician before our power, air, and supplies run out.
I'm sorry, Captain Zebby. I'll keep quiet.
No, I don't want you to keep quiet. I want opinions from everybody after I finish and after Jake decides on feasibility. First step, back to Bay of Blood. Second step, preset for transition straight up 100,000 kilometers executed at once. And don't bother to stick your tongue out, Dee Dee. You are not going to kiss everybody goodbye a third time. They won't even know we've been gone. Third step, translation to Universe Zero, near Mars but with elbow room. Fourth step, run straight through six rotations, and Jake, in each case, you preset the next rotation so that we can duck out fast if we run into something sticky.
Excuse me, Captain, but I can't preset the next one until the preceding one is made.
Dee Dee, can you preset six rotations into GD? My wife answered slowly.
I would rather not attempt to do it orally, Captain. It's awfully easy to bollocks up an oral program. I would want to write them down and try to debug them on paper, and even then I might make a mistake. I do think rotating by vernier is safer, I do, but I'll try if you tell me to.
No. We'll have Jake do that. Jake, is the sequence in its simplest order easiest to set up?
Easiest, yes. Simplest, no, because I plan on using 20 rotations to sample 15 universes normal to this one. I planned to do it in five groups, returning to zero at the end of each group. Six, then five, then four, then three, then two. The last rotation in each group simply brings us back to home base, but it keeps me from getting mixed up and doesn't take any time, really. 10 seconds or less wasted, all told.
We'll do it your way, Jake. Fifth step, after running through those 20 rotations, and we will run through them quite fast, science officer.
Still aboard, Captain Honey?
Hilda, please keep a written record, in order, of all 20 rotations. Brief notes so that Jake can take us back to one that looks promising without searching for it. The fifth step, one that assumes that we do not find what we want by rotation, is to start searching by translation along the axis from Earth Zero. Comment?
Why Tau Axis, Captain?
Jake, we know that Tau Axis is infested by Panky at Earth Zero and Earth Ten. To me, that suggests that any or all analogs of Earth Zero are open to Panky and may be infested. You remember how tickled you were when Mobius Taras told you that he was impressed by your invention of math to cover both rotation and translation, when there had been a lapse of a couple of thousand years between steps in Barsoomian math?
Yes, certainly.
We don't know what mathematical theory the Panky use, but the oldest and simplest theory of multiple universes is the one that uses the analogy of pages of a book, parallel universes separated by infinitesimals. That one doesn't even require curved space to describe it, nor does it require quantum mechanics, merely the notion of one additional spatial dimension. Like Newtonian mechanics, it would be an early approximation. Jake, it seems to me possible that the Panky are not nearly as sophisticated in mathematical physics as you are. They may have discovered the sheaf of universes along the Tau axis, without ever suspecting that there is another sheaf along the Tau axis.
Possible? I can't assign a probability to it.
Neither can I, Jake, but Sharpie pointed out about a week ago that Tau axis was not the place to look, which leaves Tau axis as a better bet, if we miss by rotation. Shucks, Tau axis could keep them busy for millions of years. Comments, anybody?
I go along with your reasoning, Captain. No certainty, of course, but I see no better approach.
Hilda? Dee Dee?
Suits me, Captain Zebby. Let's get cracking. Zebediah, I like it too. But may I offer a definition, my notion of a definition, of what we are looking for?
Certainly, sweetheart.
An analog of Earth with an advanced civilization of viviparous human beings living on it. maybe a touch more tropical than Earth is now, because we will want to be able to tell just by looking without landing that they go naked or nearly naked much of the time. I don't think I could ever feel safe again on a planet where those monsters can hide just by disguising themselves. If our own planet didn't have such stupid notions about modesty, those things could never have invaded.
Hilda started clapping.
Passed by acclamation.
Co-pilot, captain, preset the transition. 10,000 minimums.
Set, captain.
Execute without orders on arrival, Bay of Blood. Hello, Gay.
Howdy, Zeb.
Gay Deceiver, bug out. For a split second, we were again on Barsoom, then at once were 100,000 kilometers above it. Hilda said,
Thuvia was still waving. I didn't even have time to spot Kanakuk.
Knock it off, gals. Co-pilot, set for first rotation by your schedule. Family, we can spare a few moments to look at Mars. Mars Zero. No photographs. Carl Sagan's boys have done a far better job of photographing this Mars than we can possibly do with one Polaroid. I was tilting the nose down as I spoke. Hilda, you got the binocs?
Getting them, Cap'n.
Vernier's set for first rotation, Captain.
Thank you, co-pilot. I steadied Gay Deceiver so that Mars centered the windscreen. Jake, feed me some makey learny. Do you care what attitude this craft is in at rotation?
Only for transitions, Zeb. For translations and for rotations, attitude does not matter.
Then it follows, as the night from day, thou canst not then predict what attitude we'll be in whenever we arrive in a new universe. Only with respect to the built-in arbitrary zero reference frame, does it matter? Not as long as we always have plenty of space around us, but I don't want to risk any more translations or rotations parked on the surface of a planet. You've lucked through twice, I've lucked through twice, the fifth time might come up snake eyes. Sharpie, give Dee Dee a crack at the binoculars, too, then pass them forward.
Dee Dee has them now, Captain Zebby. I saw all I wanted to see. A most inferior planet. I prefer Barsoom. Me too. Here are the glasses, Ebediah.
Here, Jake, give it a gander. Don't be snooty, you two in the peanut gallery. You wouldn't look any better than that if you'd had all your breath knocked out some millions of years back. Wait till Jake and I get through terraforming it. It'll sell like beach frontage in Florida.
Zebby, are you and Jacob serious about terraforming other planets?
Dead serious. Once we clear up some minor problems. Panky, pregnancy, provisions, power, etc. How does she look, Jake?
Much like the NASA photographs.
Jake passed me the binoculars.
But I consider it as an empirical confirmation of our methodology. That planet is the Mars of our home universe. It checks, does it not?
It does for me, but I'm no expert. Here, Hilda, hang on to him. All hands, prepare for rotation. At each rotation, I'll do one tumbling pigeon, with all four of us scanning as before, unless we spot danger. If we do, Jake will make the next rotation with all possible speed. Jake, at each completion of rotation, please set up your next rotation at once, before even glancing outside, and announce set, because I may yell execute so fast I'll step on your heels.
Aye, aye, Captain.
If you ever sniff danger, don't wait for my orders. Rotate at once. And, all hands, the standing order that permits any one of us to use GAYDECEIVERTAKEUSHOME still applies at all times. In case of doubt, use it at once. We used it an hour ago. We know we can handle it. Jake, if one of us uses it, take us straight up to 100,000 kilometers without waiting for orders, just as you did 10 minutes ago at the Bay of Blood. That will give us time to decide what to do next, since we can't really go home. But hear this. Do not use BUGOUT again. Some time has passed on T-axis. We don't know that our landing spot is clear, and I don't ever want to find out by personal experience what happens when two masses occupy the same space. Someday, by remote control, maybe, from a million kilometers away, but not in person. Astro Gator, we could use a scram program that would take us back to about this point instead of Bay of Blood.
I'll work on one, Zebediah.
Any questions? We are about to rotate. Co-pilot, execute. Utter blackness.
Set,
Jake reported. Tumbling pigeon coming up. I switched off the instrument board lights, then ordered the autopilot to carry out the maneuver. Half a minute later, having shut down the autopilot, I asked, anybody see anything?
Not me.
Nor me, Zebediah.
Nothing, Captain.
That makes four of us. Record it, Hilda. Stand by to rotate. Co-pilot, execute. Again, utter blackness. Again, I went through tumbling pigeon routine. Anybody see anything? Hilda answered.
I'm not certain. I think I did, but it was faint. Could we do that tumble again?
Certainly. Didi, report.
Nothing on my side that I could see.
Co-pilot, nothing, Captain. Sharpie, call out when you see it. By autopilot, I started the maneuver again.
There.
Gay Deceiver, stop. Hilda, do you still see it?
Yes, a fuzzy star. Jacob, let me turn your head toward it.
Mrs. Burroughs leaned forward, took her husband's head between her hands, gently turned it to the right and up.
See it, dear one?
Yes, I do. Hilda, the binoculars, please.
I waited. Shortly, my co-pilot said slowly,
Captain, it looks to me like a lenticular or spiral galaxy seen not quite on edge, or it might be an entire family of galaxies, still more distant. Whatever it is a long, long way off, millions of light years. But how many millions, I have no way of guessing.
Can you reach it by transition?
I think so. I would set middle range on 6, then keep punching until I could see some change in angular width, then either increase or decrease scale to let me sneak up on it. It might take an hour. Do you want to look at it, Captain? I think you'll have to unstrap to do so.
No, I wouldn't learn anything that you haven't already reported. You say it's at least a million light years away?
Several millions of light years, at least. If this universe is at all similar to ours, but on that I lack sufficient data for an opinion.
In any case, that is fossil light, isn't it?
Eh? Oh, yes, the light we are seeing it by has been traveling for some millions of years.
That's my point. We're seeing something that happened a long, long time ago. If we did try to sneak up on it, we might find that all those millions of stars had burned out. Maybe some neutron stars, maybe some black holes, or maybe not. But fossil light doesn't tell us anything that we can use. Hilda, designate that galaxy as last chance. All hands, stand by to rotate.
Zebediah, can't I look at it?
No, Didi. We are not sightseeing. We are looking for a good obstetrician on an Earth-like planet with no panky vermin.
Yes, sir.
Did you stick your tongue out?
No, Zebediah. That's childish behavior. I shan't do it again.
Oh, honey, don't change. I love you just as you are. Mature adult whenever the chips are down. Delightful little girl when there is time to relax. Dee Dee, darling, I've laughed more since I met you than I had in many years before I met you. You're an entire harem in one. I wouldn't trade you for Dej, Thuv, and Tira combined.
How about Hilda?
I have no hesitation in saying that I have no comment, and you can quote me that that is strictly off the record. Co-pilot, execute. Blinding light. Jake, rotate, execute. Suddenly, we were in a starry void, almost home-like, but with more and brighter stars. I heaved a sigh of relief. Jake, what in hell did we fall into?
I don't know, Captain. Fortunately, I had my head down over the verniers. I didn't get dazzled, or I might not have been able to set the escape rotation.
Well, we could have gotten out by the TUH, scram, or by the dead man switch, but I did get dazzled. and wouldn't have been able to wrestle this heat manually. New standing order. At each time of execute, both pilot and co-pilot will close their eyes and duck their heads, and stay that way until each is certain that he is safe from dazzle. I goofed again, but I won't pull that goof again. Sorry, folks.
Next rotation is set, Captain.
Thank you, but we're going to sit right here until I get my eyes back. This looks like a pretty nice universe, what I can see of it around the purple spots floating in front of my eyes. Hilda, Didi, either of you have any notion of what we fell into?
Not me, Zebediah. Captain Zebby, I have 3 hypotheses, not one of them worth much.
Modesty ill becomes you, Sharpie. Give.
Interior of a global star cluster, or near the nucleus of a galaxy, or, just possibly, the early part of an expanding universe when the new stars are almost rubbing shoulders with each other.
All of them jolly places to be. Jake, do you suppose we could have picked up an unhealthy dose of radiation?
I have no way to guess, Captain.
Well, the shell of this buggy is opaque to most radiation, and that sandwich windshield has one layer that is heavily leaded glass, but no way to tell, so I'll quit worrying.
Zebediah, there may be one way to tell. If the film in the camera is ruined, some fairly heavy stuff got through. But if the next picture is okay, we're probably okay.
Hilda said.
I'm glad you thought of that, Didi. I wasn't going to mention it, but I don't like the idea of penetrating radiation while I'm pregnant. And you too, hun.
I said. I'm sorry I opened the subject, since there is nothing we can do about it. Hilda, do you want to shoot one film to check?
No, Zebby, it's a waste of film.
As you wish. My eyes are coming back. I'll start the pigeon tumble. Jake, do you want to try for spectral readings?
Captain, I think that it is almost certain that there are G-type stars out there and that some of them have Earth-type planets. But the search could take a long, long time, unless the tumble maneuver shows that we are quite close to a star resembling Sol. I think we should mark this down for later exploration, unless we find exactly what we need on Te-Axis.
Okay, I put us through one pigeon tumble. Report, Hilda.
Just lots of big, beautiful stars, Zebby, but I didn't see a one close enough to show a disk. Me too, Zebediah, but what a beautiful sky.
Null report, Captain.
Nothing new from the tumble, then. Hilda, mark it down as promising. All hands, stand by for 5th rotation. Pilot and co-pilot will keep eyes closed and heads down. Astro Gator and Science Officer are advised but not ordered to do so. Here goes. Execute. I gasped. Where in hell are we?
In hell, I think, Zebby.
Co-pilot?
Hilda wasn't too far off, Captain. It's something I could not have believed 3 months ago, before we discovered that the fantastic romances about Barsoom are essentially factual. This is some sort of inside-out universe.
Pellucidar, said Didi.
No, my dear daughter. One, we are not inside our home planet. We are in another universe entirely. Two, this universe has physical laws that differ from those of our own universe. The inside of a spherical shell does not and cannot have a gravitational field by the physical laws of our universe. Yet I see a large river flowing below us, and we seem to be falling toward it. Captain, are we in air or in vacuo?
I wiggled the manual controls. Got a little bit of air. Probably could get some support with the wings fully extended.
Then I would advise the captain to do so, unless you want us to rotate out of here at once.
I brought my car, manually, into a dead stick glide just short of stalling. Does anyone want a homestead here? I don't, because this place gives me simultaneously both agoraphobia and claustrophobia. It's so damn big. 10,000 kilometers in diameter, at a guess. Nevertheless, it's completely enclosed. No sky, no horizons, never again to see a night sky sprinkled with stars. I don't know what that light at the center is, but it's not a star, even though it looks like the sun. Too small. Much too small. But if and when we do leave, we aren't coming back, because the god who takes care of fools and explorers let us arrive in empty space, instead of maybe 10,000 kilometers underground.
It may not have been luck, Captain, but logical necessity.
Huh? You've lost me, Jake.
You're thinking of this place as a spherical shell, but there is no basis for assuming that it has no outside. It may not have an outside of any sort.
What, endless millions of light years of solid rock?
No, no, nothing outside. And by nothing I do not mean space. I mean a total absence of existence of any sort. Different physical laws and a different topology. We may be seeing the totality of this universe. A small universe with a different sort of closed space.
I can't visualize it, Jake.
Dee Dee, my dear, rephrase for the captain.
I'll try, Pop. Zebediah, I'm not a geometer, but Pop is right. Depends on what postulates you select, and the geometry of this place may require a different set of postulates from those that work back home. I'm sure you have played with Mobius strips?
Certainly, a surface with only one side, but this is a sphere.
Pop is saying that it may be a hollow sphere with only side, the inside. Have you ever tried to figure out a Klein bottle?
I got cross-eyed and a headache.
This could be sort of a Klein bottle thing. It might turn out that if you tunnel down in a straight line anywhere down there on the ground, you might emerge at the top opposite point, still inside. And that straight line might be, would be, I think, shorter than the distance across. Maybe much shorter.
0.31809 is the ratio by the simplest postulates, agreed Dr. Burroughs. The reciprocal of pi, if pi is the same here as it is at home, a point on which I have no opinion, but the geometry of this place may not be that simple. However, Captain, assuming that this is a total universe, and I think it is, our chances of arriving in open space were far greater than the chance of conflicting with a mass. But to answer your first question, no, I would not wish to homestead here, pretty as it is, unless Hilda wants to. Nevertheless, we might check it out for obstetricians.
No obstetricians, I answered firmly.
Why so, Captain?
If there are human beings here, they do not have an advanced culture. I've been following a curved glide path that approximates that big river below us. Did you notice where the other largest river joined it? Also, look dead ahead where it meets the sea. No city either place. No warehouses, no traffic on the river, no air traffic, and no signs of roads. That means to me no hospitals and no medical schools. We don't need to check elsewhere, as this is choice real estate by human standards. Ergo, no advanced culture anywhere, and a small population, if any. If anyone wants to refute me, please do so in the next 5 minutes. I can't hold this heap in the air much longer than that without using power. Power more precious than fine gold.
I check you, Captain Zebby. They might be so advanced that they can make the whole joint look like a national park, but I wouldn't bet on it. Let's continue shopping.
Dee Dee?
The hillbilly is right, Zebediah, but it's so pretty.
That makes it unanimous. We scram. Hilda, expend one film on it as a souvenir, then we rotate. I nosed the car down a bit to permit a better picture. A click.
Got it, Zebby.
Stand by to rotate. Execute. Mars of Universe Zero lay to starboard. I sighed. Pretty as it was, I'm glad to be out of there. It upsets me to see rivers run uphill. Sharpie, did you get a picture?
Hold the phone, she drawled. Yep. Picture coming up.
Good.
Zebby, I thought you didn't like that inside-out world.
I don't, but I wanted to check the film. If that picture is sharp, not fogged, you two knocked-up broads weren't hit by radiation where it counts. No fogging?
Not a bit, Captain Honey. And brighter color every second. Here, look.
I don't need to see it. I've been there. My sole interest was in radiation. Jake, I'm beginning to have misgivings about this rotation schedule. The sampling called for 15. We've tried 5 and only one, number 4, was even vaguely homelike. One of the 5 had a serious radiation hazard to our wives and unborn kids. While we seem to have lucked through on that one, how about the next 10? So far, the pickings have been slim and the dangers seem excessive. Rotations take us into some very weird universes. But we already know that Earth analogs along Tau and Ta-axis are quite Earth-like.
With monsters, put in Hilda. Panky.
On Tau-axis, probably, or almost certainly. But we haven't explored Ta-axis. Jake, are we justified in exposing our wives to conditions we can't even imagine?
Pop and Zebediah, may I say something first?
32. Hilda. If Zebby and my husband Jacob have a fault in common, it is overprotectiveness toward Didi and me. Me, I don't find this a fault. Having always been the runt of the litter, I have always been quite willing to accept protection from anyone larger than I am. But Didi sometimes rebels. When Captain Zebby asked Jacob whether or not they were justified in exposing us to unknown dangers of 10 more universes, Didi stuck her oar in, and Zebby tried to hush her. Zebby should have known better. But he is just her husband, and barely getting acquainted with her, whereas I've known her since her diaper days. Once when I was taking care of her for Jane and Didi was, possibly 4, I started to tie her shoes for her. She pulled away from me. Didi do, she announced indignantly. And Didi did. A loose half bow on one shoe that came apart almost at once, and a Gordian knot on the other that no Boy Scout ever heard of, but which required the Alexandrian solution. Come her bedtime, I cut that shoestring with scissors. It's been Didi-do ever since, backed by native genius and indomitable will. Didi answered him.
Zebediah, I realize that you're commanding this craft, but you have asked the opinions of the rest of us up till now. Is there some reason to exclude Hilda and me from discussion of this decision?
Damn it, Didi, this is one that husbands have to decide.
Damn it, Zebediah, this is one time when wives must be consulted.
Our Zebby was shocked. I feel certain that she had never before spoken to him that way. But he could not possibly show anger even if he felt it. Didi had simply matched him in manner and rhetoric. Zebby is no fool. He backed down from his impossible position at once.
I'm sorry, hun, he said soberly. I shouldn't have spoken to you that way. I will make the final decision. I must. I can't avoid it. But I should get opinions from everyone. Go ahead. You have the floor.
Yes, sir. I do have something to say for Hilda and me, and Hilda will want to add her opinion too. I know I speak for both of us when I say that we both appreciate that both you and Pop would each die bravely for either one of us, and that you both feel this more intensely now that we are pregnant. But we have not been pregnant long enough to be physically handicapped by it. Our bulging bellies do not, in fact, bulge, not yet. They will bulge, I know, and that gives us a deadline that we must meet. But for that very reason, we will either sample those other 10 rotation universes today, or we will never sample them. Never.
Why do you say never, Didi?
Because of timing and the deadline of our bellies. We've sampled 5 in less than an hour, and scary as some of it has been, I wouldn't have missed it for anything. We can take at least a quick look at the other 10 in the next couple of hours or so. But if we break off at this point and start searching the axis for a suitable analog of Earth, there is no predicting how long it will take. We may check hundreds before we find what we are looking for. I don't know. But I offered that definition of the sort of world we must find in an attempt to make it possible to eliminate unsatisfactory worlds quickly. Let's say we find it. What then? We'll be strangers. We may not, probably not, even speak the local language. But we'll settle down somehow, and Hilda and I will have our babies with skilled medical attention. Then what? Zebediah, my beloved, are you going to be more willing to take two women and two babies into 10 strange universes than you are to take us today without babies?
I don't think that's quite the way to put it, Dee Dee.
How would you put it, sir? Are you possibly thinking that you and Pop might check out those 10 while Hilda and I stay home and take care of the kids?
Well, yes, I suppose I was. Something of that sort.
Zebediah, I married you for better, for worse, for richer, for poorer, in sickness and in health. But I did not marry you to walk the widow's walk. I can't speak for Hilda on this point, but where you go, I go, till death do us part.
Dee Dee speaks for me, I said, and shut up. I wasn't as dead set on seeing 10 more universes as she seemed to be, but Sharpie darn well wasn't going to walk a widow's walk nuther. And Dee Dee had it figured out exactly. If Jacob and Zebby didn't finish that schedule of rotations today, then they would both have that far horizons look in their eyes the rest of their lives, no matter how utopian a planet we found, and they wouldn't want to take us along. Not with kids, but Sharpie wasn't going to hold still for that, no sir.
Dee Dee, are you through?
Not quite, sir. I know that I sound like a spoiled brat, but I'm not, and I don't want to leave that impression. All humans are created unequal, and anyone who can count above 10 with his shoes on can see it. You are bigger and stronger than Pop. I am bigger and stronger than Hilda. I have the least number of years of experience. Pop has the most. Pop is a super genius. But he concentrates so hard and so long when he tackles a problem that he forgets to eat. Unless he has a nursemaid to watch over him, as Mama did, as I did, and as Hilda now does. You, sir, are the most all-around practical man I've ever met. Whether you are handling a duo or dancing, or telling outrageous half-truths to get us all out of jams. 3 of us have 8 or 9 earned degrees, but Aunt Hilda is a walking encyclopedia just from having an insatiable curiosity and an extraordinary memory. 2 of us are baby factories, 2 of us are not. But one man can impregnate 50 women, or 500. I could go on listing the many ways that we are unequal. No 2 of us are alike. But in one supremely important way, all 4 of us are equals. We are all pioneers. Pioneer women go where their men go. Men by themselves are not pioneers. They can't be. Pioneer mothers share exactly the same dangers that pioneer fathers do and go on having babies while they do it. Babies were born on the Mayflower. Lots of babies were born in covered wagons. And a lot of them died, too. Men, women, and children. But those women didn't stay home where it was safe. They went along. Zebediah, I'm not asking to be taken to those next 10 universes.
You're not? It certainly sounds like it.
Then you didn't listen to me, sir. Yes, certainly I would like to finish sampling those rotation universes, and I'm not scared off by the possible dangers. But I never asked for that, and I don't ask now. It's my preference, but not a demand. What I do demand, I have already stated. Where you go, I go. Today, and to the end of our lives. Unless you tell me to get out, you don't want me anymore. I have spoken.
You certainly have, dear. Hilda? Fish or cut bait. Sharpie, What do you want to do?
I didn't really care which way it fell. Any universe was going to be strange. Dee Dee had laid down the party line. I didn't want to fuzz things up by trying to amend it, so I answered instantly.
Dee Dee speaks for me in every word she said. I have spoken.
Jake, back to my original question. Are we justified in exposing our wives to conditions we can't even imagine? I'm asking my co-pilot for advice.
Captain, you were the one who convinced me that it would be prudent to sample the universes accessible through rotation before searching for a satisfactory analog of Earth by translation.
True, but that was before we sampled five of them.
But Captain, I don't see how the situation has changed. We are going to be exposing our wives and ourselves and our unborn children to strange conditions no matter what we do. But an imaginable danger is not necessarily better than an unimaginable one. It may be much worse. The planet we were forced to flee from has grave shortcomings and known dangers even before we accidentally tangled with Punky. No need to list them because we all know that the four horsemen of the apocalypse were ready to ride again. But I can think of a very close analog of our home planet that would be far worse than Earth. One even if it didn't have a single Pancara on it.
Go on.
The analog in which Hitler got atomic weapons, but we did not. It seems probable to me that there are several such analogs because I can think of several very small changes, any one of which would have produced that result. Despite an aversion to their inhuman shape and odd color of blood, I can't see that Punky are more to be feared than Hitler's SS Corps. In fact, the cold sadism of some human beings, not just stormtroopers, you can find it in any nation, including the United States, is more frightening to me than Punky.
Not to me.
Dee Dee and I blurted it out together.
But my dears, we have no data whatever that the Punky are cruel. We got in their way, they tried to kill us. They did not try to torture us. There is a world of difference.
Maybe there is, Pop, but I don't see it. Those things give me the creeps. I'll bet they'd torture us if they could.
My very dear daughter, that's muddy thinking. How old are you?
Huh? Pop, you should know if anybody does.
I do know. I was reminding you that you said that you have the fewest years of experience of any of us, and I have the most. I was years older than you are before I was cured of that sort of muddy thinking, and not by myself. By Jane, your mother. Hilda?
Jacob is telling you not to judge a book by its cover, I said crisply. I learned it from Jane too, as Jacob knows. A Pancara's external appearance tells us nothing about its capacity for the human vice of sadism. Jacob, I am not going to try to bring up your daughter. Please don't ask me to again. It's Zebby's job, if she needs it, which she doesn't.
Sorry, dear.
Captain Zebby said,
I'm not bringing Dee Dee up. She's playing Wendy to my Peter Pan. And I like it that way. Does anyone have anything new to add to the discussion? Speak up. Very well. I've reached a decision. We will finish the scheduled rotations before exploring the axis. However, is anyone tired or hungry? Jake and I can put Gay Deceiver into a stable orbit around Mars with one small transition vector. We can call it a day anytime.
Captain Zebby, I'm still full of picnic. Me too.
Captain, I suggest that we continue. We may find a place to spend the night safely on the ground. If not, we can return here and nothing flat.
I silently applauded my husband. Zebby had done a marvelous job of refitting Gay Deceiver, but lack of space made her freefall powder broom barely adequate rather than satisfactory. With a bonine pill in, I now enjoyed freefall. But gravity has its advantages.
Co-pilot, by your schedule, Set to rotate.
Set, sir.
All hands stand by to rotate. Execute.
We were no longer in a starry sky with a dead planet nearby. We were in sunlight and upside down. Then for a few seconds we were thrown around a bit, then we leveled off, and my rump settled into the seat cushion full weight. I heard Zebby say,
"Hello, Gay."
"Howdy, Zeb."
"Hold course, speed, and height above ground."
"Got it, Zeb."
"You're a smart girl, Gay."
"But we can't go on meeting like this. Over."
"Over and out, Gay." "Phew. Time out while your skipper has a small nervous breakdown. Jake, what does that altimeter say? My eyes won't focus."
11 clicks, H above G. Pressure, 803 millibars.
"Didi, what's the statistical probability of winding up this close to a planet without getting killed?"
"Impossible to calculate, Captain. Vanishingly small, I think. No data."
"Maybe you're dead and don't know it. Co-pilot, dead man switch routine. I'm going to check the air."
"Right away, Captain."
Jacob got at the switch, unclamped it, held it high.
"Ready, sir."
"Oh, just a moment."
Jacob still held up the dead man switch while he reset his dials.
100,000 clicks straight up. Set.
"All hands but the captain will hold their breaths during air check. Jake, if I pass out, do the double scram at once. Then you'll have to go on holding your breath while you flush out the cabin. Damn it all, I should have rigged at least one oxygen mask. Too many details, too little time."
I asked, "Captain?"
"What is it, Hilda? I'm busy."
"May I suggest, Captain Zebby, that I be the canary, not you?"
"No."
"But it's part of my duties, sir. I am science officer and most expendable. You are least expendable, and you know it."
There was a long, long silence. Felt like hours, but was probably not over a minute, while we cruised slowly over a beautiful countryside. Truly, I didn't feel particularly heroic about it. It looked far more like Earth than Barsoom had looked. I could see woods and a lake, and in the distance what surely must be a village. But if it wasn't safe, truly, I would rather pass out with Zebby and Jacob alert and at the controls than not pass out while Zebby slumped in his seat. Certainly my husband would try to do it all, but we needed both pilot and co-pilot if there were danger, and we didn't need me. Zebby gave sort of a groan.
"Co-pilot, I'm not consulting you in this." "Very well, you midget-sized pioneer mother. You are the guinea pig. Jake, Didi, and me. Deep breaths. Hyperventilate. Didi, you keep your eyes on Hilda. I'll count to three and open the air scoop. 1, 2, 3. I
felt my ears pop, so I took another breath. Smelled sweet. "I feel fine, Captain Zebby. But I'll go on talking and breathing. The fresh air smells good. I don't feel the least bit woozy. Didi is beginning to turn red in the face. I don't know how much longer she can hold her breath. If this air has anything in it that we aren't used to breathing, it must not be anything poisonous. I'm running out of things to chatter about. Am I still making sense? I feel fine, but Didi is about to pop. I think that..."
"Test completed. Co-pilot, clamp and stow dead man switch."
"Aye, aye, sir."
Jacob carefully replaced the clamp and tightened it, put it back into its hidey hole. He sounded grumpy.
"Jake," said Zebby, "if you feel like chewing me out, get on with it. We're on autopilot and you may consider yourself off duty. Get it off your chest."
"Captain, I have no criticism."
That was what Jacob said, but that wasn't what his tone or voice said. It was icy.
I decided that it was better for Jacob to be sore at me than at Zebby. Didi and I are passengers, mostly. The true safety of all of us lay in Zebby and Jacob getting along like ham and eggs.
"Jacob."
"Yes, Hilda."
Don't you dare get shirty with Zebby. He made exactly the right decision, and it cost him a lot, I know. Zebby would always rather take on all the dangers himself. That's his one weakness, because it could get all of us killed. I'm the littlest, but that does not make me a child. I'm just as much a pioneer as any of us. When a job comes along that I can do best, I must be permitted to do it.
I said I had no criticism.
It was the way you said it. If you were captain, you would not have permitted me to do it. But I have to pull my weight in the boat too, or I shouldn't be along.
Zebby realizes this, when he has his nose rubbed in it,
but you don't. Not yet. Didi and I have to protect both of you as much as we can, or you two won't be able to protect us when we need it. Now tell him you're sorry.
Keep all seatbelts fastened, Zebby ordered. I'm going to override on manual a bit so that we can see better. Jake, I won't use Hilda as our canary again. It upsets you too much.
Now wait a minute, Captain. You made the correct decision. Hilda is right, and I'm aware of it. It's just that my judgment isn't much good where Hilda is concerned, but she's right. It's all for one and one for all, or it isn't anything.
Pop, I'll be canary next time.
No, daughter. You can come closer to replacing either Zeb or me than Hilda can. She knows it, I know it. And since she has the least body mass, she's probably the most sensitive to bad atmosphere. Shorter reaction time.
Let's all pipe down about it, growled Captain Zebby, and look this place over. We might want to stay here. It looks good from the air, but we won't be coming back if we leave, unless Didi can debug a perfect program to get us back here safely. Jake, I must be losing my touch. I didn't get that split-second warning of danger.
I said,
then maybe we weren't really in danger.
Captain Zebby, could we transit about 30 clicks straight up?
I suppose so. Any special reason, science officer?
I'm not sure, Captain Zebby, but I want us to see more of this country as a whole. Which way is north? I can't see Gay's compass.
North is off to our left.
Is that sun rising or setting? It's setting, said Didi. I know.
Zebby thought about it. Then this planet has a retrograde motion. That can't hurt us.
No, it can't, but it fits. Can we have that better look?
Co-pilot, Captain. Set 30 clicks straight up.
Set, Captain.
Execute.
Zebby turned Gay's nose down. We all had a beautiful view out the front. Zebby said,
be darned. A big rectangular oasis completely surrounded by desert. Populated, too. That's a fair-sized town or small city right in the middle.
Doesn't anyone recognize it? I do, from a map. My Jacob said,
but Hilda, dearest, this is an unexplored universe.
Pop, it's the land of Oz.
It certainly is, I agreed, and passed the binoculars to Didi.
The yellow brick road, dear, running into Emerald City from the left.
But Hilda, that's...
Don't say it's impossible, Jacob, unless you want to say that Barsoom is impossible, and Cart and Thuv and Tommy Tucker.
My own theory is that we've all been dead quite a piece now, killed in the parking lot back of my home. If so, I'm not dissatisfied, but Didi and I may be the first female ghosts in search of an obstetrician. Didi, how would you like to raise kids in the land of Oz?
I'd love it.
Are you certain, hun? As I recall it, nobody ever dies in the land of Oz, yet the population doesn't get any bigger. I don't recall any babies being born in any of the Oz stories. I don't recall any babies. Or MDs. Or hospitals.
Jacob, you said that the inside-out universe had different physical laws. If Zebby grounds Gay Deceiver, will we ever be able to leave? Oz works by magic, not engineering.
Didi, can Jake and I have a crack at those binocs?
Right away, Zebediah. Look at the Emerald City first. It really is loaded with emeralds. Or lots of green glass.
Keep an eye on the altimeter, Jake.
Zebby stared through the glasses until Jacob said,
Approaching 15 clicks, Captain, and dropping fast. Your turn at the glasses, Jake, but let me put her into level flight, then you take her back up again.
Again, we whooshed up high, and Jacob studied the land below while we fell. Presently, Zebby leveled us out again and passed control back to Gay with instructions to cruise in a wide circle, one that carried us to the great sandy waste in the south and the impassable desert in the north, and cut across the yellow brick road in the east and over the castle of the Tin Woodman in the west.
Co-pilot, your opinions, please.
Captain, Hilda's theory about us all being killed in the parking lot is probably least hypothesis by Occam's razor. However, I don't feel dead, and I decline to assume that I am dead. That leaves me forced to believe that this is the land of Oz, just as I was forced to believe in Barsoom. Everything fits, even to the predominantly yellow vegetation on the east, I mean west, as the compass rose is reversed, as Hilda noted. We now appear to be passing over the palace of Glinda the Good.
Why are we passing over it? Asked Didi. Why not ground Gay and pay a call on her? If we grounded at the Emerald City, we might upset a lot of people, but I'm certain we can't upset Glinda.
Co-pilot, advice, please. I have no objection to grounding. Since Gay functions at this altitude, I assume that she will function on the ground. We can rotate from the ground as easily as from here. However, if I meet a living scarecrow, I may go stark raving mad. Besides, that palace must have a bathroom in it.
A good point, although I would settle for a bush. Didi, dig out our flying suits, or something. In Oz, we must be fully dressed. No weapons. Shoes are optional.
33. Didi. Zebediah didn't put us down right by the palace of Glinda the Good. He circled around and found a meadow clearing in woods around it, maybe 100 kilometers from the palace, and screened from it by tall elms and walnut trees. I unstrapped, opened the bulkhead door, and crawled through to get our flying suits, and thought better of it. Aunt Hilda had followed me and headed straight for her own locker. I rolled into Lotus, can't quite stand up back in there, and asked, Aunt Hilda, what are you going to wear? My best. The dress I got married in, and the wedding ring Jacob had made for me in Helium. Jewelry? Nothing from Barsoom. Probably what I wore that night, but not as much. Mama told me years ago that Aunt Hilda's instinct for clothes was unbeatable. I got the long dress I wore to hook Zebediah, a pendant Pop had given me, my own wedding ring, my dancing slippers. Put my darling in mess jacket? No. But in formal tights, topped off with a white silk bolero shirt thing Tira and I had made for him when we were getting Aunt Hilda outfitted. Red sash, dancing pumps, socks to match, jockey shorts? Yes, that was all he needed. I slipped my dress over my head and wiggle-wormed forward, clutching the plunder to me. Our men were still in their seats, Gay's doors still closed. I asked, why the closed doors? It's warm and getting stuffy.
Look out to the left and you'll see why. Hand me my flying suit.
I looked out to the left. A pretty little storybook cottage with a sign over the door. Welcome. It had not been there when we grounded. I see, I agreed. So pull on your shorts and your tights. Pop, Hilda has your trousers. Then we can open up.
Didi, is that all you have to say?
Should I say more, sir? You have taken me to some very strange places. But in Oz, I am not a stranger in a strange land. I've been thoroughly at home in Oz since I was a baby. I know what to expect.
But damn it all.
Shush, Zebediah. One does not say damn in Oz. Not all sort of profanity or vulgarity. vocabulary limited to that of the mauve decade. Mildest euphemisms, or better yet, no mention.
Dee Dee, I'm derned if I'll be anything but myself.
You can be yourself, sir. You can never be anything else. But I am speaking professionally. One does not use Fortran to a computer that knows only Loglan. Can we open up now? Pop has his trousers on. It was a pretty little cottage with a broad stoop and a pink climbing rose over the door. But it wasn't a house to live in, just one small room with a table and no other furniture. The table held a bowl of fruit, a pitcher of milk, and four tumblers. There was a door to the right and a door to the left. The one on the left had painted on it, quite small, a little girl in a poke bonnet. The other had a boy in a Buster Brown suit. So Hilda and I headed for the poke bonnet. But I snatched a glass of milk and a bunch of Thompson seedless grapes on the way and put on a milk mustache at once. I hadn't tasted milk, real milk, in ages. Delicious. Hilda was drawing us a tub and had peeled off her dress. The window was open, but it was up high, so I peeled off mine. Hilda didn't want milk, but accepted some grapes. Then we made ourselves clean and beautiful. That is, we restored our Barsoomian hairdos, but without the jewelry. Whatever it was we needed, that combination bath and dressing room had, right at hand, from a loofah sponge to a lipstick just Aunt Hilda's shade. We could have spent 3 hours in there and enjoyed every minute. But we hurried and did it in 42 minutes. Zebediah looked beautiful. I knew he would. I'd picked that combo with care. And Pop looked just as smart in dark trousers and a richly simple aloha shirt worn outside his trousers. I'd given him that shirt for his birthday, and it was intended to hide a paunch that he no longer had. There was a path from that meadow leading through the woods toward the palace. Pop, with Aunt Hilda on his arm, led off. We followed. Aunt Hilda was carrying her high-heeled shoes, so I stopped and took mine off, and glanced back toward the clearing. Gay Deceiver was there, but the little cottage was missing, just as I expected. Zebediah noticed it too, but didn't say anything. His face was an interesting study in total lack of expression. I'll put my slippers back on as we come out of the woods, I said. They aren't tight, because I've always been used to going barefooted, but I can't walk on high heels until I reach a hard surface. The grassy path debouched into the garden in front of the palace. The patch through it was hard, so Hilda and I put our shoes on. I didn't know much about architecture, but Glinda's palace was more like a Norman chateau or a stately home of England than it was like the dreary castles on the Rhine. But it all had a fairyland perfection and grace, like the Taj. It would, of course. As we started up the broad, sweeping marble steps to the great doorway, Zebediah stumbled.
What the hell?
Shh, I said. Mind your language, dear. A magical staircase, of course. Glinda would not make her guests have to climb to reach here. Just pretend Escher designed these steps. He may have. Just look proud and walk as if they were level. As we reached the broad landing, two tall trumpeters stepped out of the great doorway, one on each side, raised their long trumpets, and sounded four flourishes. An old man with a merry grin, a fringe of whiskers, a shiny bald head, a wooden left leg, and wearing a sailor's oilskins, came out as the flourishes ended. I recognized him, but wondered why he was here and not at Emerald City. He took a pipe from his mouth and said,
"Welcome to the palace of Glinda the Good. I'm Cap'n Bill. You, sir, are Dr. Burroughs the Wizard, with your wonderful wife, the Princess Hilda. You must be Cap'n Zeb. Howdy, Cap'n. And everybody knows the Princess Dee Dee. She's spent so much of her life in Oz. Howdy, Dee Dee. Last time I seen you, you weren't more knee-high to a tall duck. And now look at you, almost up to my shoulder and married. Congratulations, Cap'n. You're a lucky man." "I think so, Captain. I know so. Dee Dee, Oz sends her best wishes and says to tell you that you and your family are welcome to stay in the Royal Kingdom of Oz as long as you like.
Please thank Her Royal Majesty for me, Cap'n Bill. Actually, I'm taller than Cap'n Bill now. But of course, I'll always be a little girl to him. It's nice.
Oh, I will. Come on inside, folks. We ain't formal here. Or I'm not. This ain't my regular job. I'm standing this watch for a friend of mine off on a little holiday.
He took my hand. It was horny and felt like Zeb's, and just as gentle. He led us inside, still holding my hand. Where's Trot? I asked.
Around somewhere. You'll see her. Probably picking out her best hair ribbon in your honor. Or maybe helping Betsy with Hank. Little Betsy Curtis ain't happy unless she's working. Although Neptune knows that mule gets more attention than all the mules that ever came out of Missouri. This way to the library, friends.
How does one describe Glenda the Good? Everyone knows that she is tall and stately and blonde and beautiful and never frowns and wears all day long what I would think of as beautiful evening gowns with sweeping trains. But those are just words. Perhaps it's enough to say that just as Deja Thoris is the most beautiful woman in the universe, the sorceress is the most beautiful in hers. She was surrounded by her bevy of all the most beautiful girls from all over Oz, any one of them a beauty contest winner.